I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast.
So I have been feeling deeply overwhelmed with the state of the world. I don't know about you. Mm-hmm. And naturally, what does one do but turn to social media to become even more embroiled in overwhelm? However, something that I came across over the past couple of days was this sort of like slide deck. And I thought I saved it. I didn't. Your girl be forgetting a lot of shit all the time. But I remember something from it that I really found at the time beautiful and grounding and helpful. And it was describing how in the midst of uncertainty and so many things that feel beyond our control when it comes to the war in Ukraine and so many other horrific manifestations of superiority, violence, and harm across the world, not just Ukraine, that it is actually quite helpful for us to look back at the past, like the thinking about the past and reflecting on things like ancestry and where we come from and how our ancestors have survived can really help us in like coping. And I don't know the psychology behind that or the therapy behind that. I will leave that to you, my good friend. But it really struck me when I came across that the past and looking back at the past can be so helpful in our coping or our ability to cope and be present in the now and the future, particularly, especially as a lot of us are not only tuned into what's happening in Europe, but also what's happening globally when it comes to the climate crisis. And so today I really want us to focus on kind of that retrieval aspect, like looking back specifically at who we were way back when. And the question that I want us to focus on today, which bless you, Lala, you saved the day. Your girl came in, and by your girl, I mean Lala. Usually I refer to myself as your girl, but this is Lala. Came in clutch with a great question, and I'm stealing it from her today.
I've stolen many questions from you, so.
Right? The question is, what would you want your younger self to know? This is a huge question. When you first posed it, I was like, damn, a lot. Like, because you know me, I have like many journals that I have kept for a very long time. Yeah. And I spend time looking back and seeing just how my life was, what's changed since then. And I want to know from your perspective first before I get into my bullshit, because I have a lot of things that I would probably tell my younger self. But I want to know from you, what would you want your younger self to know? And also, maybe can I add a little addendum, which is like, and why?
Yeah. I mean, there are so many things, and we could go in so many different directions, you know? Like, it would be nice to, you know, give her some fashion advice.
Oh my God, girl, shut the fuck up.
Stock really? Tips, you know, like
stock tips.
I couldn't really help her with makeup. I still haven't learned that too well. So, I mean, there's many things, but I mean, I think the biggest thing, it's all the variations, like how many different ways can I say it? Like that there's nothing wrong with her, that she's worthy of love and affection, and that she matters, that her voice matters, that what she feels matters and is actually like a huge source of strength. It's like all the different ways to just tell her that she is okay and actually beloved, because that is something that she did not feel in any way. And I think a lot of things could have been different if she could have, you know, gone through all of those times with that knowledge, you know? I mean, I think it's hard because it's like I could tell her, but there's so much I'd have to change for her, you know, in her life.
To believe that?
To actually be able to believe that. Mm. But at the same time, it's like there's so many things that she could have gotten through in a different way, you know, that she could have, you know, a resilience that would have given her if she knew how wonderful and lovable and all of those things she was.
Absolutely. Oh, first of all, like, it's so interesting how obviously our lives have been so different, but the things that we would want to tell our younger selves are so similar. Cause I was thinking around the same lines of like, well, actually mine was, you're right.
Ooh.
That was what I would say to younger me. Like, you're right.
Wow.
And that's because like, I was always so unsure about whether the things that I was feeling were real or true or valid. And so what I'm hearing both of us speak to is like, there was so much uncertainty in little Lala and little Nick. And I will say that before I was little Nick, I actually was Kiki. That was what people would call me until I stood up one day in the second grade and said, my name is Nicole. Literally.
Why did people call you that? Where did it come from?
My older sister, Elle, she used to go by Michelle, and she will hate me for telling everyone on a podcast that. But anyways, Elle, when she was younger, she actually couldn't say Nicole, so she would say Kiki, and then it just stuck. And I think, it's just, it back to sort of the similarities between the both of us, it's so interesting to think about like how we lived in a world and lived in like a little body, and that was so like unsure, and would have really appreciated like the validation of like your worthiness, the things you feel are real, you know? And sometimes it makes me sad. Like, I wonder for you when you think about younger you, if it makes you sad, or if you have like other emotions sort of directed to little Premila. Also, were you Premila when you were a kid? Like, do you have nicknames that anyone would call you that you would have responded to?
Yeah, for most of my life, people called me Prem. And it like actually kind of makes me like shudder when I hear it, partly because I think just because of all of the associations of like those years, and not all of the people who called me that, because like everybody used to, but outside of my family. But a lot of the people who did, and I don't know, there's a lot of reasons. So anyways, it really makes me shudder. It's like I almost didn't want to say it just so that I don't want people to like have it in their minds. But then I'm like, you know, if anyone were to call me that after hearing this, that would be a good like
indicator.
Yeah, I'd be like, trash. I would like, know? Yeah, I would like to be able to see that red flag.
So basically what you're saying is try her right now.
Yeah, it makes me feel really sad. And it's something I've been actually working through recently in therapy, because I've started to really talk about like what I went through in terms of like all of the bullying and stuff that I experienced, especially in elementary school. Some of it continued, but it was definitely worse when I was like very, very young. Mm. And it's like, it's so wild, because I feel like I was saying to my therapist, I almost feel like I spent years in therapy working through sexual violence, which it was time well spent, and I still need to, you know, continue working through that. But it's wild that something as horrifically difficult to work through as that in a lot of ways feels easier to me to work through than that stuff, the bullying.
Yeah.
And I think because at such a young age, I so deeply internalized the message that I was just
the worst,
like that. Yeah. I was just so ugly in every sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I feel a lot of sadness, but I feel a lot of shame. Like, I think those young parts of me are still really alive in me. And it's like, I struggle still to talk about it because I feel like if I tell, you know, people who know me now, it's like, then they'll see this like ugly, like piece of me that I've like spent so many years like gaining so much distance from, so that people, you know, won't know that those parts of me. So it's like, I wish that I could say that my whole being feels like just like love and compassion and everything for like my child self. And I think, you know, the most adult parts of me feel that compassion and that love. Yeah. But there's just so many younger parts of me, like, you know, the 8-year-old me, the 15-year-old me, the 25-year-old me, like that feels so deeply ashamed. So I think I feel a sort of like almost like anger at that young child, which is how I know that there needs to be so much like healing between like within myself, you know, between me and that like young part of me.
And that shame and that anger comes from a place of being of what? Like, where do you think that shame now
comes? Victim blaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like just sort of the part of me that like believes all the things that I heard and felt and experienced, you know, because I felt like there was a lot of contempt for me in social settings at school all the time, and also like in family settings, and you know, sometimes like from certain family members, and you know, like it felt like it was coming from everywhere. And so I think I really then internalized the idea that it's really my fault, like it is because there's something wrong with me, which is why I say like that's why I think I would so want to communicate that message to that young part of me, and why I know that it would have to be so much deeper than just going and telling her.
Yeah. Something that you said to me, or something that you've said to me on this podcast, actually, I'm pretty sure it's recorded something. and it might have been about the might have been in the episode about ego, which was from way back when. Am I making this up?
Do we have an episode about ego? Like, I think we do. Yeah. Gosh.
Anyway, so
I need to listen to our old.
My memory is archives. Failing me. Okay. But what I was going to say was something that you had mentioned about ego. And like, there's almost like an other side of ego where it's not that you feel that you're, you know, the best person, the most incredible person, but there's this belief on the other side of ego that's, how can I be so
uniquely
the worst person,
horrible,
just so deeply fucked up and horrible. And I remember you saying that, and I was like, I've never even thought about the underbelly of ego, which is that like the self-deprecation, like the extreme forms of self-deprecation that like render you so vile and ugly and just not worthy, that people like hate you so fucking much. And I think when you were just speaking to that, it reminded me of the previous episode. And it also brought something up in me, which was when I was, you know, in the fifth grade, sixth grade, I was so aware of how I looked and how my appearance didn't look like anybody else. And I felt so ugly, and I was told I was ugly, and I was told like to my face, like bullied by these two boys who are truly demons on this earth. I hope nothing but bad things follow you all the days of your life. Amen. That was a curse. But I think about the ways that I internalized their words. And then it reminds me of like in my worst moments today as an adult, 30-year-old Nick now, when I feel the least beautiful, it just brings me right back to feeling so unworthy of friendship, of the attention or the affection of the boys that I liked, boys plural, because you know I love boys. And it just hurts me again in a really different way. And I think when you just spoke to like the anger that you would have for younger you, and it's actually shame, like that resonated a lot. Mm. And then I also wanted to just share that something that I try to do that gets me out of the spiral of that, you know, flashback to that internalization of feeling ugly, is telling myself, like looking at in the mirror and being like, luckily there are more interesting things to you than the way that you look. Like I tell myself that, and I wish that I believed that when I was younger. Like I really wished that I wasn't so obsessed. And you know, our first episode of Scene, I talked about the internalization of like, you know, having dreams about wanting to be white. Like that never left me for a really long time, because I had such deep scars associated with being like a dark skinned girl and having, you know, specifically, you know, the wide nose and the, you know, the top lip that's darker, and just like all the things that make me look the way that I do that I cannot change. And so, yeah, I just wanted to remind you, first of all, of the words that you spoke to me about ego and the underbelly of ego, and then just say that like you're totally not alone in that like anger piece.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And yeah, it's interesting because I think where the ego thing comes into it is, you know, that's not from our highest self, right? That we're feeling either, you know, better or worse than anybody else. It's like this very kind of tunnel vision, wounded place.
Yeah.
Which doesn't account for the expansive nature of who we are, absolutely. But just with you talking about those different pieces, you know, what you experienced, the bullying you experienced, the white beauty standards, the everything. You know, I was saying to my therapist a couple of weeks ago that I feel like there's this sort of idea people have, like, oh, everybody like experiences bullying as a kid. And I just don't think that's true. I think everybody gets teased. I think everybody feels, you know, like an outsider sometimes, or feels like they don't fit in, or has insecurities, but not everybody is really like targeted, you know, with this like viciousness that I experienced. And I know a lot of other people experienced. And then there's a sort of like stigma, like, or dismissiveness, like, yeah, everybody gets bullied. Like, why are you still, like,
kids are shitty. Everyone's,
yeah. You know, like, why are you making a big deal out of this? And my therapist said to me, she was like, I don't even know why we call it bullying, like this different like word. Like, why don't we just call it emotional and psychological abuse? Because that's what it is. And so then when you think about, like, I'm thinking about our experiences, it's like, okay, so you have that like emotional or psychological abuse from peers, and then you have it from culture, society at large, right? As somebody who's targeted by anti-blackness, by racism, white supremacy. And then if you're experiencing it from a parent also, it's like your psyche is just being attacked from every angle. It's like, of course you would internalize that. Of course that would be something like a wound that would still get opened up, you know, even as an adult.
And I think that I appreciate you saying that, because it's like, what I need to hear is that there's nothing wrong with me for still being impacted, affected by those things. And even the piece about the underbelly of ego and thinking that, you know, you're a horribly bad person. What comes up for me oftentimes is like, the ways that maybe folks didn't have my back when I was getting bullied. And so like my mind always went to, these people are not really your friends. Your friends don't actually like you. People are talking about you. And I noticed that creeps in sometimes when I, like when friends are have needs, just like are like, hey, can you answer these questions I need? Like what I was talking to you before this before we started recording, where I'm like, oh my God, everyone's mad at me. Oh my God, people are talking about me. What's the radio silence? What's happening? And you start to like spiral about those things. And it's like, I mean, thank God we've made it out alive from those childhood experiences, but obviously we're not unscathed. Right. It still like shows up and it like, I feel so fortunate, I guess, that I have like friends like you and others who are going to like remind me like, no, we love you. Like that is not, those things that happened aren't like the things that are coming up now. Like those things are not happening now.
Yeah. And I would almost say that there's parts of us that haven't made it out yet.
Tell me.
Those parts of me get triggered or just are floating around in my psyche a lot of the time. Like there's still these really young parts that still live in that world, in that tunnel vision, that can't see the reality of how loved I am. And that that's not how a lot of people view me.
Yeah.
These parts are still back there in that pain, like still feeling that and still expecting it. Like for you, like that trigger of thinking, oh, your friends aren't really your friends and they're secretly like against you. They're secretly talking about you.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, a lot of it is just assuming that people don't like me and that people won't like me. And it's very scary, you know, social situations with people that I'm not really close to. I just assume everybody hates me.
Doesn't like
and,
you. Right.
Yeah. And I don't even realize that I'm doing that. Like, you know, again, like with like my therapist has really been, we've really been doing the work lately. I think it was last week where, you know, I was sort of saying to her like, okay, so it was really, really bad during these years. And then it was like somewhat less bad during these years. But she was like, you know, it really sounds like even the years that weren't as bad, 10 to 17, I guess. She's like, it still doesn't seem like it was that great. Like it doesn't seem like you felt like welcomed into groups or that you felt like a sense of belonging. And I was like,
okay, great. You want to take that away from me?
No, it was the opposite. I was just like, when she said that, I was like, welcomed. It didn't occur to me that I could ever feel something like that. You know, like it was just so the opposite of my reality that it was like, yeah, no, that's not a thing I've ever felt in groups. But I think more recently, I would feel that way if all parts of me could be here now and could be out of that past.
Yeah.
Because I am welcomed in a lot of spaces now.
Yeah.
But those little parts of me that are still back there that haven't made it out yet, they can't see that. They can't feel that at all.
And like reconciling what is true now versus what you thought, but not even like what you thought, because I don't want to make it seem like it was all in your head. It was like you were actively excluded, made to feel othered, made to feel like belittled and inferior and all these things. But it's like, I really appreciate you saying that, like, you know, not all of us, not the entirety of who you are has made it out alive. You know, there's parts of us that are still stuck and trying to process and trying, I guess, even I would say for me, trying to figure out whether or not what I'm feeling is making sense. Like I think that now I have a lot more tools and resources and people in my life who know me enough so that like if I were to even broach that conversation, they're like, no, nobody hates you, nobody dislikes you, here's where people are at or here's where I'm at. Like that there's folks that can kind of like walk you back into the reality of now. But I find, kind of going back to what I was talking about, like what I would want my younger self to know, is that I was right for so long. I felt like I was almost, it's not that I was gaslit, because that suggests that people are actively trying to make me feel like I'm like making things up, or, you know, I'm having like wild thoughts about things. But like my my internal feelings about myself and the world and the way things were, a lot of the time, and my sense of like relationship dynamics that I saw in front of me, especially between my parents, like were right. They were just never spoken into existence. And so there's something to be said about the ways that, like, it's not even just that there's parts of us that are stuck in the past and are trying to reconcile with like the truth now, is that like there's parts of me that like always felt like I was wrong. Like I didn't even know what was reality, and that I was like feeling things, and kind of going back to our previous conversations and ongoing conversations about being sensitive or being like emotionally in tune with other people and with yourself. Like I look back at so many times in my life, and I know I've said this to you, where I felt like something is not sitting well with me, and it manifested as a stomach ache, and it manifested as like jitters, or I like couldn't breathe, or was just like nauseous. And now as an adult, I'm like, I'm deeply anxious. Like I'm feeling not okay about something. I'm feeling overwhelmed about something. I'm being overstimulated about something. Like I'm really concerned about something. And now I know those connections. Like now I can make those, you know, mental, like they're not even mental leaps. Like I can make those connect the dots. But back then I was just like, no one understood why I was the way that I was, least of all me. So I just was like, oh, well, I'm just kind of wrong in my body. Like everything that I'm feeling is wrong, because not even, no one was even able to sort of bring that out or ask like, what's making you upset? Like that wasn't there.
Yeah. So that gets into what I wanted to ask you next. So I think something that I really love about this type of work is I feel like we can sort of reach through time and, you know, connect with these iterations of ourselves, and that it can be so healing, and it can sort of, it can like change the past in a way when we work with that young part of ourself to help her heal, you know, when we are able to give her that way out, you know, like the fact that she eventually gets out and gets through it. That's like, to me, changing the past. It's like a form of time travel. So
right.
If you could do that time traveling and reparent her, or really, or be her amazing queer auntie. And, you know, because I know your mom's amazing, but the 90s were a wild time. They were very different.
It was different.
What do you think you would give her? Like, what would you do differently? How would you change her circumstances? How would you nurture her? How would you support her to help her to know that she's right?
I would be like, what are you writing? What music are you writing? What music are you listening to? What music inspires you? Let me introduce you to other songwriters. Have you ever heard of this person? And I would give her my attention and my interest. And I would like stoke that interest in her of songwriting and music. Because for me, that was such a huge outlet. That was where you could find all of my emotions. And it's funny, but also kind of sad, I guess. Like, this is not all to say that like my parents were completely absent. They were raising like four daughters and busy and work, you know, like there was other things happening. And but at the same time, there was also like not an awareness necessarily of, you know, that emotional well-being piece, right? Like, you know, I think in their mind, it was like, there's a roof over your head, you're going to school, you have opportunities, like you're, you know, that was sort of like the thing. And by all means, like I had those things, but what I really craved was that ability for my parents, particularly my mom, to take the time to be like, how are you feeling? And so, yeah, like if I were to reinsert myself as like, just a brilliant, really rad 30-year-old queer auntie to younger me, I would tell her like, your music is cool and interesting. And like, I would ask her questions like, oh, why did you write that? You must feel so scared. Like, talk to me more about what this song means to you. And I think that younger me would have felt deeply seen. Ooh, on brand. But also like, my feelings have a place to be, and that place to be is safe, and that the talent that I have to express myself is something worth really investing in, like exploring, building up.
Wow. It's so beautiful. I so wish that the younger you had had those things.
I know.
I can feel so viscerally what a difference that would have made for her to be witnessed like that.
Girl, because it, like, that shit, to be honest, like, it, the way that not having that has, I think, played out in my life today has been in the form of really not trusting what it is that I am feeling, not being able to strengthen the muscle that is my intuition, or feeling disconnected from that, feeling disconnected from what my body is telling me. And as we talk about this all the time, like, you know, on this podcast and just in life, like, I know I've worked so hard through therapy, truly, God bless Sherry, to, like, you know, really pay attention to those things and honor those things and, like, recognize that those things are sources of information that I need to, that are, like, for me and for my survival, and not just survival, but, like, my ability to, like, thrive as well. But that's been, like, a really long journey. And so I wish that I would have had a bit of support in that way, because I have made so many decisions in my life, and many of which I don't actually regret because they help me in other ways. You know, like, I'm not going to spend time being like, if I only had this, then I wouldn't have had this or whatever. But I mean, I think I would have gotten so much closer to what I care about and doing what I care about and being with folks who actually aligned with my values so much sooner than I have. And I think I would have been able to really appreciate the fullness of who I actually am for myself much sooner. It's a long story arc.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, it's just, again, the 90s were a wild time. The kids today will never know. We've come so far when it comes to mental health, and just even in the last, like, 10 years, our understandings of trauma and emotions and all of those things. And I mean, a lot of us still haven't been exposed to those kinds of ideas, you know, that I think are just, like, I think within us, we all have somewhere this, like, deep knowing about our intuition and our feelings and how important they are and how everything connects us, how those feelings connect us to each other and how we are all connected. But there has been, you know, very specific and very intense violent systems that make us forget that every day. So it's like, it really is a long story arc trying to recover those things that I think are inherently within all of us.
Mm-hmm. When you were younger, thinking back to young Pramila, did you feel in touch with your gut, like, or your intuition? Did you, you know, were you even kind of, like, aware of those things? The face you're making makes me suggest no.
No, I didn't even know what that was. I mean, obviously, I'd heard of it, but I had no connection to it at all. I really didn't even know how to identify my feelings most of the time, and certainly not how to communicate them or how to respond to them. That's just, like, that is just information that I did not have, which is why I think one of the, you know, when I think about how I would reparent that young version of me, a big part of it would be, you know, just sitting with her and, you know, if she's upset, you know, just, like, sitting with her, breathing, giving her, like, affection and giving her time, you know, just being like, okay, like, you need to cry. That is totally okay. We all need to cry sometimes, like, cry for as long as you want. When you're ready to talk about it. We can mm-hmm. talk about it and can help you figure out how to understand what you're feeling or how to communicate what you're feeling. Because I think at that time, it certainly wasn't just my parents. I think at that time it was a lot, and it still is a lot. The question was rarely like, what's wrong? And it was much more often like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
If something was going wrong, if I was misbehaving or if I was off in some way. Mm-hmm. But even at the times where somebody did ask what's wrong, I didn't know how to answer.
Yeah.
Because there was just such a complete lack of, emotional honesty and communication around emotions.
Girl, right?
In my family and my, culture.
I totally agree with you that it's like, I imagine that for a lot of folks, this resonates, because it deeply resonates with me that there wasn't much competence when it came to being able to even sit with emotions. And I was going to ask you, and I'm glad you followed up with what it was not so much, what's wrong, but what's wrong with you. My follow-up question for you is like, when you were, needing to cry or needing to express those really big feelings, did you feel like you could express, did you have an outlet through which you could express those things or not so much? And like, what did you do to sort of like tend to yourself?
No, I didn't really. When I was younger, up until like the last, it's sort of changed in the last 5 to 10 years. But for my life up until then, I cried very easily and really couldn't control it.
Right, right.
But that was very, that was a source of a lot more shame. So it didn't feel like much of a release. It just felt like right. This horrifying thing that's happening.
Yeah.
I did journal on and off a bit. I don't look back at my journals because it's too depressing.
Hard. Yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of outlets, not really. Like, I mostly dissociated. I didn't really have outlets. And it was either just dissociation, just like kind of turn it off and like zone out, watch TV, which then I got in like trouble for watching too much TV and stuff like that.
Mm.
But I guess the closest thing that I had, have you ever heard of maladaptive daydreaming, or have we talked about this?
I've heard of this. I think. Tell us about it.
Yeah. It was really nice, the powers of social media in the last few years, that I learned this term, because my whole life I was like, am I the only person in the world who does this? It's like daydreaming, but it's like a whole other level where it's like you spend so much time in that world that it's like very like rich, deep, complex worlds and characters and whatever. And a big thing people talk about with maladaptive daydreaming, and they call it maladaptive because it gets in the way of actually like living your life and like doing the things
okay
in your real life that would actually like make your life better. It's like you escape from your life instead of living it.
Right.
It's still kind of a judgmental word, but I didn't come up with it. So
yes.
Anyways, but a big like hallmark of it is like people will be like kind of staring into space, and often people will be like clicking a pen or like pacing around, or it's like doing things, I don't know, because I think they're like so
sucked in.
You're like so in that it's like your body almost has to be doing something. I don't know if that's why. I'm just making that up as a theory, as somebody who does it. But
yeah.
So anyways, I think if I look back, because it wasn't like I just fantasized about having a perfect life. That was like part of it.
Yeah.
But then the other part of it was fantasizing about like horrible things happening. So I think that was sort of like almost a way of feeling the bad feelings or the painful feelings, but in a way that was safe
and more controlled.
Exactly.
Yeah Wow, that's so interesting. And I don't know if maladaptive daydreaming is something that I don't think it's something that I've ever experienced necessarily, but definitely resonates when you speak about conjuring up certain ideas in your head so that you have some control over that, because at least it's better than like having, having no control and being at the mercy of other people's cruelty or whatever it might be. And that's something that I continue to do. So I have some Googling to do for myself. And that's
me too. Yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah. Also completely unrelated, but as you were talking about, you know, getting the tools and the language to describe what you used to do or what, you know, something that you used to experience. When ASMR came on the scene, I was like, I've known about this my whole life.
That's funny.
It's so funny. So anyways, that was just completely an aside, but I was like, yeah.
There are good sides of social media. They give you...
It's fascinating.
Yeah, you find your people. You find the words.
You really do.
Yeah.
You really do. It's so true. In terms of, you know, the knowledge that you have now and how you would apply that to younger you, and the love that you have now and how you would apply that to younger you, is there anything that you want to keep on like learning and applying to younger you that you don't think you have, that you're still kind of like, hey, you know, this would be helpful to younger Lala, but we're still a work in progress because all of us are.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, I think what I'm still really learning, and I feel so mean saying it, I'm like, younger me, just shh, like, don't
close
listen.
Close your ears.
Close your ears for a second. But I really do still struggle a lot with finding genuine, positive love for that part of myself. I'm like gonna cry. It's easier for me to find, it's still hard, but it's easier for me to find compassion, like to kind of find like, you didn't deserve that. Nobody deserves that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's harder for me to find like, wow, like you're so amazing. Like look at all these things that I love about you.
Mm.
You know, like my therapist, my wonderful therapist again, said something along the lines of like, it's not just about wanting like the absence of abuse, but, you know, wanting to be truly like cherished and just loved and have people, you know, think that you're just like amazing and all kids deserve that.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of was like, oh, what? It's not that I obviously I'm a therapist. It would be so easy for me to access that if I was working with a client and thinking about them as a kid.
Right.
That's so easy for me to access.
But for yourself.
But when I think about myself as a kid,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, I don't know. It's hard for me to find that like level of just like appreciating and cherishing.
Mm.
So that's something I still really need to work on. And yeah, I mean, I know I have the ability because again, like I can so easily, it's second nature to me. It's first nature to me to access that for all the people around me, my clients, absolutely, my friends, my family. But
yeah,
it's like, okay, how do I take that skill and transfer it to this place where I need it the most?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of for myself, like, I'm still working on really accepting that I'm not too much.
Hmm.
And that, like, I'm not overwhelming or too, insert word, you know, that I'm like just enough of what I need to be. And yeah, I think that that's really it for me is like, I think I still feel in many ways, and I'm so lucky because I have to always kind of give myself to help me recognize that I am just enough and all of that. I need to also like look around me and like pay attention to all the people who affirm that I'm just enough and that they like love me for exactly who I am. But I think that when I was younger, I always wished that I was something different, something else, something more, something less, more, you know, like it was always a comparison thing. And so now in my adult life, I know that, I mean, we all engage in comparison, but I think the way that it shows up for me is I still continue to doubt whether or not I'm like good enough to, smart enough to, have enough experience enough to have, like, and by experience, I mean like lived experience in as a Black bi person, you know, like those kinds of things continue to be constructs that I like run up against all the time, where I'm like, oh, this isn't for me. I can't, like, no, this other people needed to be the one to do that. Other people need to be the one to do that. I'm not good enough for that. I'm not the right fit for that. And I think I count myself out a lot of the times. And I don't really know why. I don't 100% know. And I want to say something. Earlier in this episode, when you said it's fascinating, maybe that wasn't the word, but you basically said it's like fascinating that I've spent so much of my time in therapy talking about sexual violence and so much less time talking about the things that really, like all the things that came before that, you know, like my child, like a huge theme in my life, a huge amount of harm that I've endured. And that really resonates with me so fucking much. It's like the ways that we almost neglect parts of us that we still think are things that we should be over, or the ways that we minimize huge parts of us that are still just waiting to be like rooted and tethered and grounded and affirmed. And yeah, I wanted to come back to that because I wonder why we do that. I wonder what that means. I don't understand how we can almost gloss over or skip over it, like entire constructs that have really shaped and continue to shape how we see ourselves in adulthood, with all the love and support and care and accomplishments and cool shit that we do and are now. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know why I still continue to feel like not enough, not good enough, but I do. And I think it's important to like name that and say and speak that out, if only to speak to like the younger version of myself to be like, gotcha, got him. Like, you were still in there feeling inconsequential, but you're quenchal.
Okay, see, this, it's things like this, which is why you're exactly the right amount.
I'm so sorry.
That was so ridiculous, and I love you so much for it. It's like, yes. See, this is, I don't know, I just really appreciate the space that we're opening up for ourselves and for our younger selves through this conversation. And I feel like those younger selves are always listening and, you know, with us. And I'm really glad that they could hear some of what we're talking about today. And I also just like, I just have this desire, like, I wish that I'm sorry, this is going to be my version of like the consequential thing you just did, because it's like sometimes, you know, it's like, because our brand is our brand for a reason, but then sometimes you like go to say something and you're like, I'm so sorry. It's like, so like,
you self-censor because it's corny
on the
shit.
Nose. Exactly.
Give it to us. We want it.
I really wish that you could see yourself through my eyes, you know, because I think that like love and cherishing and feeling like exactly the right amount, like not too much, not too little, like brilliant, can do anything, like I just so naturally see all of that in you, and I wish that you could always see that, but in the meantime, until you fully get there, I will be over here seeing all of those things. And I'm so sorry that it was in the exact words of our brand.
No, we apologize for being on brand. That's the episode. That's a motherfucking wrap.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community, and we cannot do this without you.